Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show. She writes, I'm wondering if you know someone who can talk about how women with ADHD deal with grief. I lost my mom to cancer, diagnosed in May, gone this month. Sometimes I felt so overwhelmed. Now I'm questioning if my ADHD is affecting my grief processing. It could be a really interesting discussion, but I don't even know where to start to find the right person. Richard Branson, Michael Phelps, Justin Timberlake, James Carville. Wait a minute. Where are the women? Greta Gerwig, Lisa Ling, Audra McDonald, Simone Biles. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of industries. They all have ADHD, but you don't hear much about that now, do you?
You know what else you don't hear about? Are the 43% of people with ADHD who are in excellent mental health. Why aren't we talking about them and what they're doing right? I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and that's exactly what we do here. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, and now the author of my new book, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I'm also a certified ADHD coach and the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a patented system that helps ADHD women just like you get unstuck and fall in love with their brilliant brains. Here, we embrace our too muchness and we focus on our strengths. My guests and I credit our ADHD for some of our greatest gifts. And to those who still think they're too much, too impulsive, too scattered, too disorganized, I say, no one ever made a difference by being too little. Hello, hello, hello. I am your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for another episode of ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I can't believe we're finally here. So 43 minutes of tech problems, but these three women stuck with me. So I am enormously grateful. Just a quick reminder that I do have a new book out with HarperCollins William Morrow, also called ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. It's a compilation of all of our learnings here on this podcast, and you can order it and get our free bonuses like my workshop series and ADHD resources guide by going to ADHDforsmartwomen.com/book. So you know that my purpose is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. And in the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something, not one. And so I am especially happy to introduce the podcast that we are going to do today. It's like none we've ever done. And in truth, I'm a little apprehensive because I'm going to introduce you to three ADHD women who will all join us together. Yeah. Four ADHD women all on one podcast, all at the same time. All of these women, however, have been on the podcast before, and I'll include their previous episodes in our show notes and I'll mention them in their bios. So, how did this episode come about? Well, back in August, I was in an Uber in New York City, and I was heading to meet my team at HarperCollins. And I remember that period as being especially tough. I had just lost my mom unexpectedly. She caught COVID, which led to awful headaches, and then she had a massive stroke. We spent 10 days in the ICU COVID unit, donning all the COVID PPE. We looked like all those segments that you used to see on the news every single night. And we were hoping against hope that she would wake up, but she didn't. She was so vibrant before all of this happened. And I've talked a lot about this on an episode. It was episode 249 that I did called Adieu, Beautiful Mama, if you're interested. I'm not going to be sharing my story again here today generally because we only have so much space. And I think these women's stories, which you haven't heard before, are going to be more interesting to you. But I have to say, it still feels really unreal, you know, that she's gone. So right after my mom's service, I had hightailed it to New York City to help my daughter find an apartment for law school. And right there in this Uber, Lori Peterson emails me and she writes, and I'm going to introduce you to Lori in a second. She writes, "I'm wondering if you know someone who can talk about how women with ADHD deal with grief. I lost my mom to cancer, diagnosed in May, gone this month. Sometimes I felt so overwhelmed. Now I'm questioning if my ADHD is affecting my grief processing. It could be a really interesting discussion, but I don't even know where to start to find the right person." And that just struck a chord with me. You know, I mean, here I am, still grappling with the loss of my own mother, and Lori's reaching out, sharing that she's going through the same thing. And it was a reminder of how connected we all are in our experiences, especially around something as universal and personal as grief. Meanwhile, our next guest, Sandra Santorino, who is one of my closest friends, and we met online, was going through the same sudden loss of her mother 3 weeks after my mom passed away. And I had really been noticing how similar our take charge, get out of my way, get it done kind of, I don't know, way of doing things was. You know, family members would probably have called us bossy because that's what we call take charge kind of women, right? And so that was my next sign that we needed to do this episode. Then our third guest today, Anita Robertson, a psychotherapist, reached out to me after listening to episode number 249 that I had recorded for my mother. She had come on my podcast a month after her own father had passed away, also because of COVID. She wrote this: "Despite being in the field of ADHD, I've reached out to many experts and have found very little in direct support of grief, ADHD, and the executive function nightmare of death in the USA. In true ADHD fashion, I created a document of how to support an ADHDer who has lost a loved one, focused on a parent. This isn't shiny or pretty, but it was a list of things that my amazing support network did that truly helped me, and things they missed that would be helpful for someone with ADHD. Oftentimes, people do not know what to do and often do nothing because of it. I would also find it cathartic to talk about ADHD and grief if you decide to discuss this more on your podcast. It has been an eye-opening experience on ADHD and death, to say the least." And of course, that was the final straw. I knew we had to do another podcast on ADHD and grief. So that is the lay of the land and how we all ended up here today. To reduce confusion, what I've asked each of these women to do is, well, okay, first of all, what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce each guest and ask them to share their story. And then we'll go back once we've heard them all. I'll throw out some general questions and whichever guest wants to answer, we'll go from there. Okay. Throughout the podcast, though, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask each guest to please say their name before they speak, because I don't know about you, but I definitely have problems with, what did I call it? Auditory working memory, basically. When there are multiple voices, I don't know who talked, you know, who spoke last. And so the whole time I'm trying to figure out, okay, now what was their story and who was that? So I'm going to ask them to say their names before they speak. So let's start with the delightful Lori Peterson. You may recognize Lori from episodes number 61 and 143. Lori, you are officially our most frequent guest on this podcast.
Oh, wow.
I know. She also has the distinction of having diagnosed my son with ADHD and dyslexia. It was the third time he was diagnosed. Everyone, by the way, else had missed his dyslexia, but Lori. She diagnosed me with ADHD. It was also my third time being diagnosed. And again, I think this is an ADHD thing. I'm still thinking, oh, are we sure it's ADHD? Maybe I should get diagnosed again. And because she did neurotesting as well, that's why I decided to reach out to her. She also just diagnosed my daughter on Wednesday with ADHD. My daughter, Atea, finally hit the wall in law school. She's in her second semester, just started her second semester. And she was just like, why do I continually read things 50 times and it takes me 100 times longer than anybody else? And then they all take my notes and they get an A+ and I get a B. So she was like, okay, Mom, I'm going to go get tested. And so we did that over the Christmas break and she just got her results on Wednesday. Oh, and there was one more thing, Lori. You also have the distinction of being the only mention in my book that wasn't hacked down to nothing by my editors. So Wow. They just loved you, Lori. I don't know what it was, but they pretty much kept everything that I said and then asked for more. Okay.
Oh, I love that.
Lori Peterson is also the director and owner of Diagnostic Learning Services, where they test students and adults for learning disabilities and ADHD. Lori was diagnosed with ADHD as an adult, but her symptoms track all the way back to elementary school. Lori runs her business with her husband, who also has ADHD. They have three adult children with ADHD and one who somehow does not. I love that. So welcome, Lori. Did I get all of that right? And would you mind sharing your story about your mother?
I would be happy to. And you know what? I'm not a crier, but like just now talking about it, it's getting me kind of emotional. So it's really interesting how your emotions mess with you. But thank you. Thank you. Yes, you got it all right. So last May 1st, my parents left for the Bahamas. And my parents have been retired for many years. They are travelers. They love to travel. They never sit still. And they left that morning, got on the plane, flew to NASA. As they landed, my mom had a stroke. And my dad could barely get her off the plane. Of course, she wouldn't go to the hospital. So they got to the hotel. And, you know, my dad, he was 78 at the time, turned 79 this summer, last summer. But anyway, obviously he can't carry her. She was one whole side was not working the way it's supposed to. You know, he's calling us, my sister who lives an hour away in Fort Worth. We're here in Dallas. We can't do anything. You know, we're like, do we fly out there and help them get her home? All this time thinking it's just a stroke. My mom had had a history of some blood clots. She also had really, really high blood sugar that she was having trouble managing. But other than that, I kept thinking, why did they let her fly with blood clots? That is crazy. So anyway, long story short, we get her home by the grace of God and American Airlines, who were amazing in helping getting her on the plane, off the plane. They literally got her from the plane to my car, got her in the car at 7 o'clock at night, took her straight to the hospital. Yes, she's had many strokes, apparently, lots of little ones. And then one that kind of, you know, was the big one there in Nassau. At 3 o'clock in the morning that night, I get a call from her doctor. Why it had to happen at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll never know, to let me know that when they scanned her chest for any more blood clots, they saw a mass on her pancreas that was traveling into her liver, into her lungs, and it's pancreatic cancer. And at three in the morning, I'm sitting with this information, and my husband was on a golf trip. So it was just me. Couldn't get my sister to answer her phone, trying to figure out, because we were meeting dad the next morning to go to the hospital, how are we going to tell him? So I had to sit with this all by myself for a couple hours, and it was terrible. It was clearly, I didn't go back to sleep. So my sister and I went over and told him that morning. And, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen my dad cry. And my parents had been married for 55 years. He fell apart. It was heart-wrenching. But anyway, found out at stage four, my mom wanted to fight it. She wanted to go ahead and do chemo. Her oncologist, we found out her birthday was May 6th. She turned 77. We found out, you know, all this information on her birthday. So she decided she wanted to do chemo. Well, the problem was she was having so many strokes that they would set her back. She would have another stroke, it would set her back. So she only got about three rounds of chemo in before we finally had to say, I think we're just going to do hospice. And we did that at the beginning of August. I think what was hardest for me is she passed on August 18th. So she did hospice for about 10 days, which is kind of what they predicted, which is eerie that they can be so spot on with that. And I think the hardest part, well, there were a lot of hard parts. She lost her ability to really communicate with, she had another stroke about a month in. So there was a lot of that time she wasn't really able to communicate. She would try to talk and she would use like the wrong word and we'd all laugh. And it was kind of funny because she pulled this word out of nowhere in the middle of a sentence. And I knew what she, I'm like, I know what you're trying to say. I got it. But my sister and I both had kids graduating high school. My baby, her oldest, both graduated high school in May. They both went off to college in August. My mom missed it. And it was terrible. I think what I found interesting is that I cried at my mom's funeral and I cried. I was there when she passed, which was the worst experience of my life. And it was in her home, which I do appreciate. And it was just me and my dad. It was my niece's birthday. Then my sister and her family were out to dinner when it happened. I think, you know, my mom, I know my mom is with me 150%. I am confident. But I think right then and there, I went into management mode. The minute they got off the plane, I was managing. I live 5 minutes from my parents. So I was going over there all the time to help my dad with stuff. I was helping arrange home care and what hospital and what rehab. And it was constant. And I thrive in that. My ADHD brain loves that kind of stuff. Like, bring it on. And I don't know that I ever took the time to really grieve. And as soon as she passed, it was like, okay, funeral. And then I literally had to drive my son to Denver to go to college. And we rolled into all of that. And then it was the holidays. And I feel like I never, you know, I don't know. I don't feel, I know I've grieved, but I don't feel like I've grieved. Or did I grieve the right way? Or is there a right way? You know, at Thanksgiving, my sister just was in inconsolable crying. And I had nothing. But I'm crushed. I miss my mom so much. I called her every day. I don't know when I won't want to pick up the phone and call her and think, oh, I got to tell my mom about this. But now that we're kind of over the holiday hump and my dad is really lonely. So now my task is keep up with my dad. I go visit. I take him dinner. I go hang out with him. I take him out, you know, and he is grieving still and so lonely and it breaks my heart. But that's just kept me, you know, go, go, go. So I feel like my ADHD brain has helped me through this process, but don't know. At times I just think, should I be more sad? Should I be more upset? You know, it's just what's right, or is there a right? And I think I've just finally come to the conclusion that everybody, you do you. You grieve like you need to grieve, and it's not really anybody else's business. So it's been a rough year.
Yeah. I can relate, Lori.
Yeah.
Are you the oldest?
I am.
Ah. And how many kids are there in your family?
Just me and my sister.
You and your sister. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's also that oldest thing, right? Where just kind of take charge. But yes, I can completely relate. And I can completely relate to this. Well, and I feel so bad saying this, but, and I shouldn't even be getting into this yet, but I'm just going to say it. I thought it would be harder. And there are some times that are really, really hard. And then there are other, and maybe it's because we watch the television and the movies, and that it's, and I know it's not like losing, like, oh my gosh, if something happened to my husband, right?
Right.
And my dad,
my child,
keeps telling me that, or your child, right? My dad keeps telling me that it's much harder. And I get it. I know it's much harder for him because that was his partner.
This was my first loss. Like, I lost my grandparents when I was young. I didn't have, it didn't hit me like it would as an adult. So it was my first, you know, and I knew I was incredibly lucky to be in my 50s and have both my parents. Like, it's a rarity, right? So how lucky am I? Yeah, but now I still want her back.
I know. I totally get it. Okay. And so, you know, on one hand, I'm like, well, I thought it would be harder, but then in the same hand, oh my God, like I came out with a book and my mom never even read it and I wrote it for her. And, you know, it's that kind of stuff that I miss, like holidays. I don't even want to do holidays, right? Because she was the holiday. But then the day to day, it's so weird because then you go on with your regular life and I still feel like she's here. But anyway, I'm going way too far. Let's talk to Sandra. Thank you, Lori, so much for your story. And I know we'll hear much more of it as we go on. Okay, Sandra. So Sandra Santorino, welcome Sandra, is known as the positivity practitioner. You know her from episode number 57 of this podcast. She credits her sense of fun, energy, and creativity to her ADHD. Sandra has dedicated the past two decades to living by her mantra, you never know how or when you might touch another life. When her children were younger, she started and ran a nonprofit called the Cure Chief Foundation, where she recruited and trained thousands of volunteers for more than a decade. Today, Sandra is an author, video professional, tech assistant, and consultant to women in business. In fact, she handles all the live tech for all of my programs and was my right-hand person in the day-to-day of our book launch. I should also mention that Sandra has the dubious distinction of losing her mother in August and then losing her father 5 months later. This was only 3.5 weeks ago. I'm so sorry, Sandra. Okay, Sandra, did I get all that right?
You did, except I'm out of retirement and I did come back just for you, Tracy.
Thank God.
I am Sandra. My name means helper, defender of mankind. And you will know me on the podcast as I keep saying my name is Sandra because I have a distinct Boston accent. So there you go. So hello, all of you that are listening in and everyone that I'm here with today. And I thank you so much, Tracy. I'm honored to be here and take part in this podcast on grief today. I can say I was diagnosed with ADHD about 5 years ago, coming up on 5 years. And that's how Tracy and I connected. And I can also say that I am truly blessed that I never had to really deal with grief before in my life until just recently in 2023. I believed in my heart that my parents were going to live forever. I'm 62. I had them until they were 93 and 89. And so many of my friends lost their parents, you know, when they were in their 40s or even as young children. So I am definitely blessed. And I thought they were going to live forever. I never pictured the day that they were going to be gone. And it happened, and it happened on July 27th, 2023. My dear mom, Elena, who was my best friend, confidant, every day we would talk, we would gossip about my two brothers, we would talk about life, we would talk about what was happening in the world. She was fun, she was a hoot, she was high energy, she didn't take crap from anyone, she would speak up all the time, I don't know. Maybe she created someone just like her. And I think that through this whole process, my parents might both have ADHD, but I can't prove that 100%. So that was a little bit about my mom. I'll go into their story a little bit more in a couple of minutes. And then there's my dad, Primo, his name is. He was the one and only Italian immigrant. He was orphaned in Italy and taken care of by his godmother. Came to this country when he was 20, learned to be a stonemason, met my mom, had a family, had the best daughter in the world, way better than my two brothers, Nomaly Kid, and I just had to say that. He learned to trade. He was a talented stonemason and also loved to be the center of attention and entertain. He loved to sing. He could tell a story to a stranger on a street and make someone smile and come alive. Both parents, in fact, stayed very active until the end. They had friends in Quincy, Massachusetts, their hometown. They were married for almost 70 years. They were active all the time. They would go to Florida for 6 months. They would go out singing and dancing and entertaining. They loved their family and they loved life, I can say, 100%. And my parents, for the most part, were very healthy and happy their entire lives. They never had to deal with any sickness, any disease, any illness, you know, cancer or anything like that. That's why I think this was especially more hard for me, because I think their death was gradually happening over the years, but it was so internal, you know, with their organs, their heart issues, their kidney issues, their edema, you know, more internal things that I didn't really have time to grieve or really understand what was happening, because it was kind of slow, in my opinion. Last summer, my mom took a fall and had 17 stitches, and that was what kind of did her end. The fall turned to stitches, which turned to an infection, and she became septic, unfortunately. So after her hospital stay of several weeks, and then followed by hospice, during her last 27 days of time here on this earth, that was sort of when my grieving began. I witnessed my mom, again, different than my dad's death, but very similar in a lot of ways. I witnessed my mom for 27 days. I'll have that 27 day in my mind forever. And she died on the 27th. There's something with this number. But for the 27 days, the last 27 days of her life, she was just drinking water. She wasn't eating. She was very weak. We had the most enjoyable day. You know how they get that energy back in the end, they tell you, the Tuesday before she passed away. And again, I felt like I was grieving the whole 27 days because I could witness her like slowly passing away. We had the most beautiful visit, almost like she came back with like a burst of energy for that day. And my family was so blessed to witness this. In fact, and I'm still jealous to this day, she called my husband. We call him Buster, but he's Anthony. She called him over from the corner of the room and she said, she looked right into his eyes and could speak as clearly as could be and said, you know, I just want to thank you for being such a great father and a husband. And she went on and on, you know, it was a whole paragraph, and he was just so touched by that. And we were so blessed that that last visit was just so special. And I think all of this kind of helped in the grieving process, you know, in my heart and what was going on. Sadly, my mom passed away the next 2 days after that wonderful visit, where I felt so much peace in that room. And then there was my dad, my dear dad, that we had to care for now. And I have two older brothers, and he was heartbroken. He had a very, very hard time the first couple of months. You know, we would visit him over at the nursing center and he'd be over in the corner in a chair with a hoodie on, crying. And I never saw my dad cry really my entire life. And just had, you know, a broken heart pretty much was the major thing. And he again sort of went downhill fast after that happened. He had the same similar problems with kidney and heart and internal organs just failing, you know, like my husband tried to explain to me, Sandra, it's like driving an old car and it's running, and one day, you know, a couple of things are going to start wearing off and dying, and the car's not going to start anymore. That was sort of my parents' both lives witnessing. I was witnessing that in front of my two caring daughters and my husband and my brothers and their families. So my dad, you know, besides him grieving with the broken heart, started kind of declining fast. He was walking with a cane one day, and within a week, he was confined to a wheelchair. He had oxygen in his nose to breathe a few days. And he's an Italian guy, and he loves his pasta, and all he talks about is food. And when he stopped eating these Italian foods that he loved, and his appetite started declining, again, my grieving was sort of happening as I witnessed this, and I was kind of preparing myself that he was probably going to be losing his life as well. We visited him the Tuesday, something that had, again, special with the Tuesday before they passed away. But we brought his CD to him with this old-fashioned CD player. Remember those back in the day? And we put it on. He had 14 songs on there that he recorded back in 2014. And we were singing with him, and we were dancing, and he was moving around in his chair. And again, just like my mom, kind of came back with this burst of energy, a gift to us. And I know it was, and it all helped me in my grieving process. And when I left him that day, I said, "Ti amo tanto, Dad, I love you." And I knew when I said, "Ti amo tanto, I love you, Dad," that in my heart, that was the last time I saw him. And that Saturday, he joined my mom on December 30th. And now I think they're both happy and healthy and dancing and singing and meant to be together. So I think Lori had mentioned that we all grieve differently, and we don't know how we're supposed to grieve or what's supposed to happen. But I feel like everything that I kind of just described sort of gave me the peace in my heart and the comfort. I can't even put it into words, but knowing that and feeling that in my heart kind of got me through the whole 5 months and everything that happened. And then again, there was people like Tracy that was such a support system, and some close family and friends that would constantly call me and text me and send me cards. That definitely was a big help as well. Just knowing that you're not alone and there are other people that are experiencing loss. They might not be the same loss that you have, but they're there with you to support you and to care about you and to make you feel like you're not alone. So that's my story.
Thank you, Sandra.
You're welcome.
You know, so as you're talking, you know, I thought about what I said, that, oh, this shouldn't be this easy. And I think that what happened for me is those first 10 days when my mom was in that coma and I was at the hospital, you know, by her bed every single day. We'd drive 2 hours to get there, 2 hours to come back. And those were the days that I didn't even know how I was going to keep going. So that was hard as hell. And I think being there at her bedside, that was the grieving. But then I was also, like you, Lori, I was just waiting for, okay, when am I going to fall apart? When am I going to fall apart? When am I just not going to be useful? And that's what I mean when I say, basically, I'm waiting for it to be harder, because I haven't fallen apart. And so if I haven't fallen apart, that means I haven't grieved. So I just wanted to make that clear, because I didn't want people to think that, oh my God, she's this unfeeling. Because sometimes that's how I feel, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'm not just losing it. Like I have not once literally broken down just sobbing. And I'm still waiting, and I'm kind of now putting her with my, well, what if something happens to my husband, that's when it's going to happen. It's all going to be in one big ball, and then everything's going to go to hell.
Hi, this is Tracy. I wanted to let you know about a free program that I'm running in April called 3 Days to Fall in Love with Your ADHD Brain. Look, if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know that I do not believe in pathologizing neurodiversity, and I certainly don't believe that the ADHD brain is disordered. I believe that it's just a different brain that requires its own user's manual to be happy and successful. I always say that we're Macs in a Windows-driven world. After all, why should we pathologize brilliant brains who have non-linear creative ways of thinking, processing, and learning? Look, in just 3 days, I'm going to show you how to fall in love with your ADHD brain. Together, We're going to learn how our ADHD brains work, why ADHD shows up differently in women. We're going to replace shame with pride and create our own ADHD user's manual so you can work with your brain instead of against it. I'm also going to show you how to make better, more confident decisions and stop that ruminating brain in its tracks. Finally, together, we're going to talk about how to answer that, what do I do with my life question? Let me share with you one of the comments that a former 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain student shared with me. Tracy, I am so impressed and amazed by the depth of the content you shared with all of us for no charge. This has been a truly meaningful, helpful, and hope-giving gift. I think I could spend many months working through all of the tips, information, and resources you've provided us for learning to understand and love our ADHD brains. The love and support that the women in this group have provided is mind-boggling, but it's also a reflection of who you are. I can't thank you enough. Well, thank you. And remember, it's all entirely free, so no cost to you at all. The free training will be live and start in April, and we're going to meet every day at 10 a.m. Pacific time. There will also be a Facebook group with women just like you to build community with. If this sounds like something that might benefit you, you may sign up at spyhappy.me/3days. That's spyhappy.me/3days. And just as an aside, if you can't make that time, know that there will be replays. So I really hope to see you there. Okay, Anita, you've been so patient. So finally, I would like to introduce you to Anita Robertson. Anita Robertson, she, hers, is a psychotherapist in Austin, Texas. Oh, you're in Austin. And where are you in Texas, Lori? Are you in Dallas?
I'm in Dallas, Plano.
You're in Dallas. Okay. Is it all the best people? Is a psychotherapist in Austin, Texas, and the author of ADHD and Us. Hold on one second. A Couple's Guide to Loving and Living with Adult ADHD. You know her from episode number 229. And by the way, I think this is the best book on ADHD and relationships that's out there, bar none. I think it's an excellent book. Anita is the creator of the ADHD Relationship Bootcamp that teaches ADHD-affirming relationship skills through games and connection. Anita's father unexpectedly died in April of 2023, and so she has started to provide more resources, education, and support to adults dealing with grief and or juggling the caretaking responsibilities of aging parents and kids. Well, I guess our best purposes do give meaning to our past, don't they, Anita? So, Anita, could you tell us your story, please?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tracy, for having me on here. Yeah, I always find it very important to have like spaces for connection and grief. And I think that's been one of the best things. And I have found connecting with other ADHD women in particular really, really helpful. A little bit of background, because I do think it is interesting. I am also the oldest and the only girl. I have two brothers from my dad. And I kind of have two losses that are recent. It sounds like I might be a little different. I have experienced a lot of loss, a lot of peer loss in my mid-30s, which is very abnormal for that to happen.
Anita, and then of course, can I stop you for a second? Did you say peer loss? So like friends?
Like it, yeah. Oh. So it's not normal. I would say it's kind of abnormal, the amount of friends. And then there was a particular group of friends that we've lost like maybe seven in a short period. But that was several years ago in the sense that I have some experience with grief. And I think that's important because, you know, Tracy, what you were saying of like, I'm still waiting for the big cry. I was like, oh, my grandma, my favorite like ADHD woman who just like lived life the best. When my grandpa died, she's like, I'm just waiting for the cry. I'm just waiting for the cry. And I was like, I'm just hearing my grandma and all of you. It's just like, aw.
Did she ever have it?
She did. It took her a long time though. We just did kind of a living memorial for her birthday a couple months ago. And she had said that she did finally have that big cry that I do think my grandma grieves really well. she lives life really well, and she definitely knew how to grieve really well too.
Is there such a thing as grieving really well? I shouldn't be asking you that question now.
Well, okay. Yeah, I think, well, I am 100% with Lori. There is no right or wrong way to grieve. Like, you know, grief is such a hard thing. It amplifies so many things. And I've had two experiences. So my grandfather died the day before my birthday in July 2022. And my kid was maybe, he had just turned 6, I guess. He was still pretty young. And my grandparents were just like my people, you know, because when my parents divorced, they just weren't functional. So my grandparents on both sides were just like the people who are safe, secure, all of that. And so with my grandfather, I was thankfully on vacation. So it wasn't like I had to cancel work or anything. And I did feel like I was able to grieve, you know, like he was 97.
Right.
Unfortunately, my kid brought home COVID from school. I got it. So the trip that I had in June to go see him didn't happen, but I had several talks, especially that got even more amplified with COVID. Several talks with them of kind of end of life, what they meant to me, like all these things where I wasn't with him when he died, but I got a lot of closure. And my struggle at that time was, how do I parent and grieve at the same time? Because my kid was sad because he knew my grandparents because we went up and stayed close to them in the beginning of the pandemic. But then he was also kind of angry. You know, he's like, how are you going to do this? And he still had a lot of needs. And so that was more of my struggle of how do I grieve and how do I parent or balance these needs at that time. His memorial was beautiful. This is what I mean when my grandma's grieves well, like all the tears, she's like, thank you for those tears, you know, like, thank you for this. Like, thank you for loving and being here and all of these things. And it was just such a connecting and freeing experience. And I just, those moments with my grandma, that's where I was like, oh, like, I feel so connected versus the, oh, don't worry, I'm okay. Or, oh, did it, you know, that type of response, like of just honoring all the forms of grief, right? Yeah. And all the doing and all the other things. But I also recognize because I wasn't responsible for planning the memorial or doing any of those things, like I had the freedom to grieve. And then April of 2023, my dad went in for kind of a preventative procedure to see if he had pancreatic cancer, which it turns out he didn't. And the surgery went well, everything went well. My brother, who's disabled, had come and he was living with him. And so he was his caretaker and he was just like, they were just so happy together. They were just doing really, really great. And he just wanted to live a long time. And so he went into the hospital. A few days later, he took a turn for the worst. I went and I spent like all the time with him in the hospital. And it turns out he had COVID. And then I got COVID from spending all the time with him in the hospital. My dad was very like, you know, he had to have gotten it there. He had like really no exposure and none of us, we were all being very careful, even though it was like, you know, 2023, we didn't want anything, wanted to do everything we could. And I think the hardest part, like listening to all your stories is that, you know, since I had COVID, I wasn't feeling super well. I checked in with the hospital and they're like, yeah, you should probably wait. And I was trying to think of like, I don't want to bring COVID into a hospital with other people, even if I have a mask. And so my brother, because of some of the medicine he takes, he has a tremor. And so he couldn't give himself like a COVID test. So he still would go to visit my dad at least once a day. But he doesn't really have a lot of skills for advocacy or anything like that. And then on the fifth day, like I had thought about going, but I wasn't feeling well the night before, sixth day that I was, you know, according to the CDC to go in. I was getting all this stuff done of getting him transferred to a rehab that would accept him with COVID and doing all these other things. And I get this phone call that, I get this phone call that something is going really wrong. And so I rush over there. I called my brothers. I was like, come, you know, I don't know what's going on. And he had died. So he had asphyxiated in his heart because of the oxygen and everything.
Yeah.
was just so low, which it just stopped. Like any of the stressors, it just stopped, and they tried to revive them and they couldn't. And it was just such a surreal experience. And my brothers came a couple hours later. I think my husband was with my kid at the dentist. He was somewhere, I don't know. But it was such a surreal experience. And I think one of the hardest things is knowing that, like, he was alone, that all of that stuff of knowing that you can always kind of, when somebody's there, like how you guys were all there with your parents, like you can advocate all of that stuff. And like all of you, it's no surprise. I'm kind of like the doer. I'm like more of the functional one, not necessarily with all the super like boring tasks, but at least with like mental health care connection, all of that stuff. So it's just like, I think it, and I think I've coped so much with my life of like seeing like my parents, you know, break from their divorce and those things and thinking of, oh, how do we do this better? Mm-hmm. So I do think there was a little bit of that. And I still have that today, even though I know it's like nothing you could have done is whatever. I made the best decisions, but it just is like, it was so hard because even though like COVID is less than, there's like this trauma that comes from not being able to see him, of feeling like, well, nobody else is really doing anything. And so like, why was I doing something and I didn't get to say goodbye? Like, cause it wasn't, there was really no chance of death. Like, you know, I kind of said, okay, Dad, we should go over some of these things like beforehand, but we had just gotten back from my best friend's trip, 40th birthday trip in Scotland, and it was his. So we missed his birthday and we wanted to celebrate that. And it's just, you know, it's a harder conversation to have.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he made sure like the will, and I was the medical power of attorney, and I had all those things, but we hadn't gone over anything. And so this experience with death, I think was like, is still the hardest for me, because I'm not only like the executor of my dad's estate, which is, he did pretty well until like maybe 2012 or 2013. And then he just kind of gave up with that like piles of paper. So like inheriting a house, an ADHD house.
Yeah.
You know, one, we weren't really prepared for that. And then also my brother, who couldn't live independently and had like such a hard time, right? Like he just couldn't do anything. He had way higher needs than like my kid or me. And so making sure that he was okay. And then both of us had COVID. And so then we're just like isolated. We can't, you know, I would have been isolating from my kid and husband because I was like, we can't all go. You can't go out. Like I can't do anything, you know? So thank goodness they didn't get it. But then it's this weird grieving process where it's like people could come by or drop off food at a distance. And and it was in Austin. I don't know if you remember, Lori, but it was super cold and super rainy. Like, so we were sitting outside on the porch, my brother and I, under blankets, and it was just pouring down rain. And I was like, well, I don't know. Cause my grandpa's from Scotland. And so I was just like, well, you know, there's anything, the weather is like kind of bringing Scotland to us. So it's been hard, I think, in the ups and downs. I've definitely made some space for grief, but I still, even preparing for this, I was like, oh, I wanted to do some over the holidays. I wanted to kind of connect, you know, because it's like all these things of getting my brother stable, getting him into housing and case management, like all this stuff, and then selling my dad's home, which turned me into a spiral. I don't know if anybody's sold their parents' home, but that plus a few other things just put me in such a negative headspace that like I talked to my doctor and I went on antidepressants just to kind of get me through. Cause I was like, I'm isolating. I'm starting to see the signs. And I know we'll talk about all the ADHD stuff later, but like, yeah, it's been an intense experience. And I think, like, I feel like I'm just caretaking now. I don't know. All the caretaking that I had, there's like a finite level. I have just been depleted and it's been on the reserves, and having to manage all the stuff, like all the stuff of the executor part has been so hard. And there's also been some of these really beautiful things too. But I think the hardest thing is that I didn't really get a chance to say goodbye. And I think also too, like this, still it's the season of first, like I have a great support network that does check in and do so much, but like things drop off, people drop off, you know, like their radar, and that's what it is. And it's always hard.
Can I ask you, how old was your father?
He was 74. He would have been 75 in 2 months.
Okay.
So it was unexpected. And I would say I'm probably one of the first. So I'm 42. So it happened when I was 41.
Yeah.
So it's like a very interesting thing where it's like I have these very two different experiences with death, and then also with the amount of responsibility and everything that kind of fell.
Yeah.
And I think it's also hard too, because like, I don't know about y'all, or you said a lot of your friends have already lost their parents, but I also feel like everybody in my age group is seeing their parents get older and is afraid of it. So they're also having their own experience that can feel very weighted, or kind of get in that way of connection or support too, because it's like, oh, this reality is starting to happen.
Yeah.
With all of that, you know, and I still have a young kid too, who also has needs. So I think there's just so many secondary losses on top of that when you lose like a parent.
And I think for you, first of all, you're a lot younger. You have a younger child. And I'm sure if I had lost my mom when I had a 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15, whatever, right? I would have been thinking about all of that lost time, right? That my child never gets with that parent. And then it sounds like you had so much more responsibilities just as far as after it happened. I'm kind of in awe, actually, Anita, of what you've been able to handle given all of it.
It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smartass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming.
Well, yes, we push through, you know, and I think there's some of it is like very true of what you guys are saying. It's like we know how to do those things, but it's also really hard in that way. And I think like the benefit of being a therapist and the downside of being a therapist is like you see these moments that like happen in people's lives that like appear later. And to me, it's not a scary thing, but for me, it was like, I really want also, like I hold in my heart, like I want my kid to know how to deal with grief. Like I think all of us, I think it should be a part of a life skills class of how to grieve and support that we get in like middle school or high school.
Totally.
But like, you know, I want my kid to do that. And he does. I mean, like he gave me when I was stressed a little bit last week, he like did a creative project and he wrote what like he was going to say and give to me when I died. I was like, well, that's great. You know, and too, like for Mother's Day, because it was right before my dad's memorial, he was just like, you know, like happy Mother's Day. I'm going to like do the best memorial or whatever. Cause I was so focused. I was like, I can't play with you. I have to focus on this. And, you know, but I've always done like either a kid friendly version of that memorial, or this time I had something that him and the other grandkids could participate in. And they're all young, like 10 and younger. Yeah. So. But yeah, it's just, I think there is a difference because there is that competing need, you know, a very big need of like that space to grieve, the space to take care of family, the space to organize. And like, I don't know,
what I will say, Anita, is that my kids who at the time were 24 and my son is still 21, they were the ones that supported me and the family. So it wasn't that I also then had to take care of a family. Like, I can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot more. That's different.
It is. And I still feel depleted. You know, I don't feel like I'm back in the groove of things and, you know, just seeing like these markers. Like, I think when I went on, I was like, do I even go on? I pushed back like a couple other podcast interviews and this was like, well, I don't know. I feel okay. And then not. And
yeah,
it's just like this weird, like up and down. Cause it's like everything that is your norm is not normally your norm and your bandwidth isn't the same. And I think it's a very challenging stage of life, no matter what, you know, as like we were talking a little bit before, it's like a lot of times, like your parent is that person that you talk to every day, or that was your like ADHD cheerleader and all of those things. And so it does.
Was that your dad for you?
My dad was always available for me, like, you know, and he would just listen to us and be very interested. And he was really good at creating magic. So like Christmas is like, I don't know. My husband was like, you're just grieving. So I was like, I didn't find the pictures. You know, like I had to pay somebody actually to help me unpack some of the stuff that I took from his house and the memorial. Cause I was like, I can't, you know, talk about ADHD and then talk about the emotional grief. I was like, I can't.
Yeah.
But anyways, I was like, I realized like I hadn't finished unpacking all the boxes because I was like, I couldn't find the pictures and I wanted to do all these things and bring some of the fun and the joy that my dad, he was... Oh. You know, I'm sure he had ADHD now looking back at it, but he was very good at making these magical moments, planning for all this fun, loving the surprises, like the Christmas poppers and all of that. And like, and me being the female, right? And two, like my brothers, one's disabled. So that's like, you know, he can't do anything, but the other one.
Well, that sounds like it's an additional thing on you now.
Yeah, it is. It is. Unfortunately, like I'm very glad that he's doing a lot better. But it was a choice and a priority, but there is a cost to that that I still feel like I'm recovering from. But I also feel like, you know, cause I was like, wow, I'm in a group project with all three of my brothers of like, you know, to clear up my dad's house or to do all these things. And it's like all ADHD.
And you're leading that.
Oh yeah. Like I'm like, wow. Okay. There is a lot of difference of supported and not in all these things. Cause I'm like, okay, if I make it a crisis, they will come. My brother will come and things will happen. But if not, like, and my husband is just so amazing. Like he went to my dad's house after the summer cause we went away for the summer, which we had planned before my dad died. And he's like, wow, it's just impressive. Your brothers not only didn't like pick up anything in the house because I gave him a list of like, hey, this would be very helpful if you guys could get all these things done, not thinking they would get anything done. He's like, but they managed to leave more stuff. Like there's a pile of trash. And he's like, I don't know. Well, they just got cleaned. It's
the girl.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. So it was just like, that's where I kind of also like got, you know, some comic relief where I'm like, I can write a stand-up comedy show almost, or using all the skills and pillars I talk about in my book of making those decisions.
Your next book.
So a publishing company asked me to write another book and I was like, yes, grief. And they're like, oh, that's not going to sell. I was like, well, whatever.
Really?
They said grief doesn't really sell. Anyways,
oh, it's
who
such
knows,
an American thing, right? Let's just pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was like, okay, I will write again because I want to process this because I was like, my own family dynamics are so heightened. And I think that's the other thing with grief is that it shines, it amplifies whatever's there, the closeness or the cracks. And then also like, you know.
Can you talk more about that?
Well, just in the sense of like whatever is there in the foundation.
Okay.
So like a lot of time, and this is not like true for everything because everyone grieves differently. But, you know, like my aunt would say, she's like, well, this is just. Because she came down for a week. She's like, this is just so different than our family and how we grieve together and come together to help is that closeness, you know, I almost feel like with grief, there's like almost like these two glasses and the way that people show up and support, whether it's bringing food or coming over and doing dishes or checking in on you or whatever it is in these times of like challenge. This also is true. Like, you know, after you've given birth or any of these things, like, it fills you up. There's this like connection and everything that fills you up. And it doesn't take away from the loss, but it almost gives you the fuel to keep going or offload or do everything. And so when you have like a really good community of closeness, right, then it's there. And then when you have maybe like, you know, in the US we're known for it, you know, very dysfunctional families and different things, it gets amplified. And so people that grieve differently or like are focused on certain things and there's fighting and there's conflict. And I know with I can see it with my grandparents dying, like money equals love. And so there's a lot of, you know, a lot of that generation didn't get the skills and knowledge and practice to be able to identify their emotions. So it comes out in different ways. And so you see a lot of almost like broken relationships that maybe had cracks in them that they were like functional that happen after death. And so I think that's some of the things. And I could say like, at least my brothers, you know, we did not fight. We did not do anything. They are just like, thanks, Anita. Great. Yeah. Great job. Yeah. Whatever you want. Whatever you want, you know? And, you know, one brother is like, I will do this. And I'm like, hold on. What are you hearing me say? Cause like, I think you're trying to turn this into like a, I'm going to save Anita type thing. And that is not what I'm really asking you right now. Type deal of, you know, like picking up our dad's ashes or any of those types of things. But that's a little bit what I mean is that it amplifies. So there's all of these other kind of not only secondary losses, but if the family unit is kind of not really there in the same way, that can kind of amplify whatever kind of disconnect, and it can amplify and can be very triggering in everybody's grief. And this also happens before somebody dies with anticipatory grief as well. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. Like, you know, our family came into town and my brother's like, well, I can't make it because I have to watch my mother-in-law's dog. And I was like, because that was the crisis. That was the urgent thing. And I was just like, what? My aunt's just like, you guys just do things differently. Like, this wasn't how like, all, you know, I was like, okay.
Watch your mother-in-law's dog. Oh my gosh.
No.
Okay.
I know.
Wow. That's really interesting though about... But it makes total sense. If you have a really strong family unit, grief is going to make it stronger. If you don't have a strong family unit, it's just going to make everything worse, right? Because then all the stuff that's being stuffed down is coming up in the middle of this. Aye. So I'm curious, Lori or Sandra, I know we've been kind of alluding to this and probably more than alluding to it, but how it seems like most of the people that I talk to with ADHD, like if there's ADHD and, you know, lots and lots of trauma, then maybe it'd be different. But generally what I see is that the way we process grief is literally through extreme action. And I'm curious if either of you have a comment about that.
This is Lori. You know, I think, I don't know, extreme is the word, but I think action and diving in. And I almost think the helper, like Anita was talking about, like the helper, right? Like, and Sandra, you talked about that too, just diving in and just, we don't mind, like give it to us, we'll do it. But I think it feeds us, it feeds our brain. We're better when we're stimulated and we're busy and just, I'll do it. I'm a taskmaster, right? Like, which also then doesn't allow us the time to really marinate in it, good or bad. But I do think action and showing, I think also that's a little bit of your love language too, right? The acts of service and let me help you because I love you. And I, of course, I'll just take this for you. So I think that plays into it too.
I was going to say, it's Sandra. I was going to say, first of all, I think Anita and I might have the same brothers because I could relate to almost everything she was saying. Holy cow. And I think, I'm thinking they might be on the spectrum too. Who knows? It's one big happy family. Action, hyper-focus, whatever you want to call it. I did not mention in my story my parents passing away that during the whole process, we were putting their condo up for sale, cleaning out, throwing out and donating and going through stuff for all of the months while it was happening and even a little bit before that, as well as transitioning them from their condo living to their nursing center. So again, the girl in the family, the youngest, the one with ADHD that can hyperfocus, got shit done because my brothers, the procrastinators, would be like, we'll do this, you know, we'll do it then, or maybe we'll do it whenever. No, we need to get it done now. And this is the plan. So I felt like, you know, they were afraid of me. They're like, ooh, watch out for Sandra. Just gathering all my mother's stuff. Like I needed a whole day to do that. Couple of days actually, just with her closet and her jewels and all the stuff she had collected. And I felt like that was also a help to me. I wanted to do that. First of all, I didn't want them touching my mother's stuff, but that helped in my grieving. You know, I was in her room by myself. It felt like almost spiritual to me that I was going through her clothes and I felt that connection to her. And it was almost part of the grieving process, I think. So I'm glad that I jumped in and did everything the way that I did and kind of kept my brothers in line, because I think in the outcome of all of it is that my hyper focus and energy and my drive and my action kind of kept us all in line. And here I am, I'm taking credit for it. I hope they're not listening to this podcast, Tracy, when it comes out. But I feel like someone had to do it. And, yeah. And it was me, and they kind of just fell in line, and we all got along and we all cooperated. But I definitely was the driver of the action 100%. And it sounds like you were too, Anita, that they're not going to mess with you.
I wonder though, Anita, if these kinds of experiences, when everybody is dealing with their own grief, and then we come in like friggin', you know, the wind taking over, managing everything, I think that can also cause problems though, right? Because that's what we do. We come in like a bull in a china shop, make decisions because nobody else is making them. And then people get upset. They're not always grateful, right? They're not always, you know, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Like they don't even realize how much work it takes.
Yeah, this is Anita. I think that definitely can be part of it. You know, for me, I try to ask and engage, and it's just like, you know, with the memorial and all these things. And it was like, whatever you want and all these other things. And finally, I had to say, you know what? I've given the information. Same with selling my dad's house, all these other things. Mm-hmm. Like, I've given you the information and I am going to act on it. And I did everything that I could. But yeah, that definitely is something that I've seen, not in my experience with my dad, but in other, like my grandpa. You know, people wanted to do this and then, oh my goodness, they're doing this. That's not what you should do. Yeah. Don't go to that. Like, that's not what we're supposed to be here for. Don't have like, you know, this. And it's just like, whoa, like kind of in this way where sometimes it can also be multiple cooks in the kitchen of how they want to like really do things or what they think is important or how those things are. And I think especially for males, because, you know, they're not really taught that, or they're just expected to like kind of be taken care of in that way or not have yeah. to do as much, that they are expecting like the emotional caretaker. Because like my aunt comes on saying like, wow, nothing. I knew you were pulling it all, but like literally nothing would get done if you weren't there. And my husband just really did most of it too. Like I did, you know, all the other like logistics of everything he could do. And I was so resentful of how many times and how many places I had to call and say, my dad died. Ugh. Like, not on my time, on their time, you know?
Yeah.
And like all of this stuff. I mean, I will say I had a lot of ADHD rage. I had a lot of ADHD rage and towards systems that I think are harmful and extra harmful, you know, like towards the IRS, towards the Social Security office, who's made me fill out 3 forms and I can't fill them out right because my husband was too busy to like do it for me or double check my work. I even went into the office because it's common. Like they withdraw the last Social Security payment. It happens, I guess, all the time of talking to some other people I know, but it's just like adding. Yeah. And so that rage can easily turn into like other people because like I don't want to be pushed. I've heard, you know, I've had a few other friends who have lost their parents and they probably have like at least an ADHD in-law. They're like, no, I have to be there to go through the clothes, but then they'll never be ready. Yeah. And so it's just like the things kind of drag on. So I think there is, those are those dynamics and those cracks that get amplified, you know, and it sounds like Sandra and I have like brothers who are like, good. You know, what's up. Okay, great. You know, type deal.
But this is the thing, right? When we do things, we tend to be very good at what we do. And so people just expect, oh, let her do it. She'll do it well. And I'm fine with that as long as at some point someone says to me, look, thank you. I really, you know, I see what you're doing. I appreciate it. But if there's a bunch of backsniping and, oh, well, she shouldn't have done that or she shouldn't, you know, it's like, screw you. It's this balance, right? Of wanting to do, like I think about for my mom, I knew what my mom would want. It wasn't what everybody else wanted because my mother liked things really elevated and really nice and really beautiful. And my entire family does not care about that. But I just felt like I was fighting for my mom because I knew what she would want. And I'm still glad I did it. But I know that there are people who aren't happy with the fact that I just kind of took the bull by the horns and did it. But I'm like, well, you're not doing anything, so I'm going to do it.
Oh my God, Tracy, this is Sandra again. So yeah. I have to tell this. It's funny. My mother hated flowers.
Yeah.
And
How did she hate flowers?
She hated the smell of flowers. She didn't like getting flowers as gifts. So my brothers were all like, all weird, like, oh, well, how can you put in the obituary, like, in lieu of flowers? And I said, well, first of all, you can put that because we can pick a charity and people don't have to spend money on flowers. But secondly, I feel in my heart that mom would not want flowers in that room during the wake. And I was adamant about it. I was so adamant about it that I came up with a crafty idea. And it was beautiful. It sounds tacky, but believe me, it was beautiful. She had a balloon arch over her. There was a cross made out of balloons.
That's your mom, fact, though, right?
My mother was like smiling away at this because she hated flowers. My brothers thought I was crazy, but they let me carry it out and they were happy. But even the funeral director comes up to me when we're all walking in. He said, Sandra, I have to say, this was tastefully done. And your mother is the second person ever since I've been in the funeral home business to ever have balloons instead of flowers. And I'm sitting there going, okay, yes. And so many people are still commenting, like, I've never seen anything like that. That was beautiful. Your mother would be so proud that you did that, Sandra. And like you, Tracy, it's what my mother wanted it. And I'm the only badass that was going to carry it out. My brothers weren't going to do crap. They were just going to sit and watch me do it.
Right, because what you were doing was challenging the status quo, right?
She got balloons, and my family was just like, I can't believe you pulled that one off, because I never second-guessed myself. I never looked back. I heard people going like, ooh, you know, tacky or whatever. No, it's going to be beautiful. And as soon as I saw it, I like just melted. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like the best thing I probably could have ever done. And it was for my mother. It wasn't for me. I just happened to carry it out, so... Three gold stars for that one, Tracy.
That's hilarious.
Dealing with my brothers and then my mother's wishes, of course.
So I'm curious if you all can speak to, was there anything or are there things that really surprised you about yourself going through this experience? Like you didn't really know that either you were capable of it or that it would be that important to you. Anything that comes to mind?
This is Lori. I think I was surprised at what I was capable of. You know, when my dad calls at 10 o'clock and says, Mom is in the bathroom, she fell, and I'm in the car, you know, contacts are out, but I'm on my way over and I'm going to pick her up. I'm going to get her in her bed. I'm going to, you know, help her get cleaned up, get the, like, what? Like, just, and didn't even think about it. Like, did it. And at the time, my dad's like, I don't know what to do with that. You, thank you so much. And I was like, of course. I mean, I live 5 minutes away. Of course, I'm going to come help. But I still would be like, wow, I just pulled that off. You know, I did this. Like, I'm here. I'm helping. And I think, too, I was just surprised that, again, I got through it still waiting to cry, like waiting for that big breakdown. Because I do feel like I'm very, very, my family's close, very, very close to my parents. I've lived close to them almost my whole life. And the thought of my parents not ever being here used to bring me to tears, right? Just the thought of it. So when it actually happened, I thought, I'm going to be a disaster. And I feel like I was kind of like the strong one. And that surprised me a little.
I love that. I used to lie to my teachers when I was in very young in grade school, like first, second, third grade.
And hey, Tracy. Lying is a sign of ADHD. Just want you to know. Just so.
Yeah, I know. But here's your question. Because I would, and you know, I remember when my son went to that psychologist who said, oh, your job as his parents is to reduce his expectations so he won't be disappointed in life because he had ADHD. So, you know, she didn't know what the hell she was talking about. But I remember her talking about anxiety. And I said something about this. I told the story that, well, wait, you know, no, isn't it? Because my son would be really worried about us dying. And I said, when I was a kid, I would literally go to my teachers and I would lie and say I had a stomach ache because I would get a bee in my bonnet that there was something wrong with my mom and I needed to see her. So I would go to the school nurse. They would call my mom. She would pick me up. This is like training a dog poorly, right? She would pick me up. She would take me out for lunch. We would go home and watch reruns of like Perry Mason or one of those shows. And, you know, she'd be ironing or knitting or whatever. And so like that was my mom time because I was so panicked, you know, about something happening to her. So I, like you, my entire life, it has been my biggest fear, something happening to my mom. Not so much my dad. I don't know why, but probably because, you know, my mom's the same gender parent and all that. And so I didn't think I could handle it. And like you, I was just blown away. And I am so squeamish. You all have no idea, like blood and tubes and doctors, and I hate hospitals. But I was like there every single day. And, you know, sometimes I had to look away, but I was able to do it. And so throughout this, as awful as it all was, I'm like so friggin' proud of myself of how I handled it. When many, if not most of my family members were like, I can't, I can't, I can't. And I was the one, I can. I was always there. There was no way she was going to be alone for, you know. But also, Anita, just so you know, my mother, when she had her stroke, we don't know how many hours she was by herself. And I was just watching the last episode or the last series of the last whatever of The Crown. And Princess Margaret, I think it is, had a stroke. And I mean, I didn't really know what a stroke looked like. And I saw that, I think it was Wednesday night. And that really upset me to think that she was by herself. There was nobody there. We didn't know. We don't know how long she was, you know, down. That is really upsetting. But I mean, obviously, had I known, and you know how you do that thing in your brain where, well, like for the longest time, I would remember the time, you know, and the day. And had I, you know, 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago, 3 weeks ago, like had I been there, had I known, you know, instead of going to Costco and picking up stupid beach towels for Taya and her friend, why didn't I go see my mom? You know, your mom had COVID, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But I mean, obviously, if I had known, I would have, right? Okay, so what was the question? The question was, what surprised you about yourself through this experience? Anita or Sandra?
Anita, you want to go?
Oh, either one. You can go.
No, go right ahead. Go ahead.
I don't, because I think I've dealt with grief, you know, on and off. It wasn't like I've definitely broken down, cried, taken lots of time off, all of these things. But I think the thing that was surprising to me is just the almost untethering, right? Of, I think, losing two people, of feeling a little bit like I lost some of my identity at times, or wondering, oh, like, I don't know, questioning my relationships or these types of moments where it's just like, it's nothing is there. But this is also really common when you lose a parent, like you feel untethered, like. And so I think,
wait, can you explain what you mean by that, untethered?
Like, I think of it as an anchor, right? Like your anchor, and it's like your waves are coming, but at least, you know, you're kind of staying in the same area if you're a ship.
Yeah.
And then like sometimes if you are, and this is different, everybody has different relationships with their parents, all these other things that, you know, but if it gets like cut, it's like, you're just kind of floating everywhere. Like, it's like, I felt at times disconnected to myself, or feeling insecure, or feeling like low level anxiety, like not like something's wrong, or like that I'm very alone in the world, despite other people being there. So I think that was a little bit surprising, that I don't think I felt as much before in my previous ones. And then I think too, like in the fall, when I was kind of like coming back to things and doing things that I had scheduled or had wanted to do, and was like increasing that again, this kind of like almost kind of what I call dopamine chasing, you know, like this, okay, yes, 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 this, 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 and then being so depleted.
Yeah.
And this like yo-yo part that even made me like post a little video, because I was like, oh, no wonder we like kind of can get misdiagnosed with like bipolar, because like, yeah, if I didn't know what was going on, it probably would have felt very scary to me. But like, it was like, I could recognize it, but I was like, oh, you know, almost like this desire to feel something different or to do these things. But then it still is different. Like, it doesn't take away the loss or, you know, the depletion. Like I am so ready for everyone to take care of me and for me to take care of no one like in my life. Like I am like, I would like to resign from doing things like completely. You know, I have retired. It's just nobody else has gotten on the working court. So I can't do it quite yet. But, you know, my kid's still just, he's 7.
Yeah, I know.
Lots of long ways to go.
Are you closer, though, Anita, to like all that stuff you had to do for your dad's estate? And are you closer to kind of wrapping that up at least?
Well, this is the thing. So nothing's urgent anymore. So I am kind of just, I could wrap it up. I just haven't prioritized it because I also need to recover. And so there's moments of it, but I definitely feel the drain.
Mm.
But I think that part, like when I was, you know, especially in the fall before I sold my dad's house and it kind of like spiraled out, like this go, 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 and then get excited about a different project or something. And then it's like all these realizations are kind of crashing. And I think that was, I wasn't expecting that, I guess. So I think that was the thing that surprised me. And also too, like to also have that kind of balance, because I definitely relate to that go jumping in and doing all those things. And I'm not able to do that anymore. You know, I definitely need a lot more space to grieve. And I have, but I don't think I've given myself enough because it doesn't feel like there is, or there's all these other costs, like these dreams of work or with my kid or all these, that's what I'm talking about. Those secondary losses, there's just across the board of even having that space. And it's so disorienting. And I think that's the thing. It's like, it's almost like you have glasses on that are just a little blurry that come in and out, you know, that like everything is slightly distorted at times. And you just don't know when those glasses are going to come on. And I think that's the hardest thing or the most surprising thing or that like I'm still kind of just dealing with of that and having, and I have a lot of self-compassion, you know, I'm very glad that I've gotten all the support and resources that I have. So I don't have any negative voices being like, you should do this or blah, 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 or you were wasting money. You know, like I sold my dad's car that I haven't done anything with and somehow insurance is like $80 a month for like a worth nothing car, but I just haven't prioritized like transferring it over to ours or figuring out what to do with it. But I think it's just the urgency is gone. I am very depleted. And so hopefully I'll wrap it up. But I also just want to have fun too. And so I think it's just like this weird, like
bouncing.
What I used to know how to do to take care of myself has like, it's
not working.
Something's come in.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's not the same ride and I don't have the same tools and that's normal. And I know that, but it still is like, there's a cost, right? And it's challenging. So I think that to me is probably the most surprising of how of the unexpected times when it comes in, even if it's like it's expected, you know, even if I know it's a good chance, you know, it's just like that, the unpredictability of that.
Thank you. Lori, you have, I just realized we're on a different time zone and I was thinking noon my time, but don't you have a meeting you've got to get to?
I do. I'm sorry. I have a few minutes.
No.
Yeah.
Let's definitely wrap up. I think we've shared a lot. And I think this has been just, it's just so interesting to me to see. I think a lot of it is life stages too, right? How we handle grief. I can't imagine being in a situation where I've got to manage not only what's going on in this grieving process, but also my family. And, you know, I feel really grateful, honestly, that I had my mom as long as I did. And Anita, I wish you had your dad as long as I had my mom. And I wish your child did too. Okay, so let's wrap up. Lori. Lori's the one that conducts ADHD and educational assessments. She does the full battery of psychoeducational testing, blah, 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 for students and adults. Lori, where can people find you if they want to know more about you and what you do?
Our website is ediagnosticlearning.com and our podcast is Let's Talk Learning Disabilities.
Wonderful. So we're going to put all this in the show notes. Sandra's our author, video professional, tech assistant, and consultant to women in business, although she claims she's retired.
I'm retired.
Where can people find you?
They can follow me on TikTok. Of course, you'd know that I'd say that. I'm Positivity Practitioner on TikTok, and I really want to get more into TikTok. Besides just watching people, maybe give tips about ADHD or how to stay positive or something like that. So you can follow me at Positivity Practitioner. And I also have a website in my name, sandrasandorino.com, and you can find out a little bit more about me. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Sandra. And then Anita is our author and psychotherapist. Where can people find you if they want to know more about you and what you do?
So on my website, anitarobertson.com, and then I also have some resources in the ADHD resource section on grief that I created with this process, and Strength In, like IN inside your mind, on TikTok and Instagram. Those are the places that you can find me.
So that's what I have for you for this week. Thank you, ladies, so much. For me, it was somewhat magical just to know that there are other people out there like me, and maybe you don't do it exactly like me, but there's this common thread that I see of we've learned that when we're in action, I think that it helps us. We've got to go to that brain part, right? At some point. But I also believe that you can stay in there so much, and then whatever we focus on gets bigger, right? And it just gets harder and harder and harder. And so I know, at least for me, and it sounds like for you all too, there are times when, no, when you get into action, when you're the doer, it does help you process as well. So we all have to just do it our own way, right? So thank you. Thank you so much. So just a quick reminder before we wrap up, if you are enjoying my book, I'd be incredibly grateful if you could hop over to Amazon and Goodreads to leave a review. And guess what? You don't even need to finish the book to review it. Feel free to share your thoughts up to wherever you've read. And then you can always go back to update your review later. And even if you didn't buy the book from Amazon, this was new to me, you can still leave a review there. And your reviews, they're super powerful. They really help with the algorithms. They make sure that our book gets noticed and shared more often. And remember, every review counts in helping spread the word. Our goal is to change women's lives one woman at a time, and we couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you here next week.
You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Join us at ADHDforSmartWomen.com, where you can find more information on my new book, ADHD for Smartass Women, and my patented Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system to help you get unstuck and fall in love with your brilliant brain.
Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget to sign up for our free live virtual training, 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain, starting on April 15th at spyhappy.me/3days. I'm telling you, it's life-changing.